Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hurley. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small caps. So welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Hello, everyone, as usual. Good to be back.
Yeah, well, just like the superb weather outside, we've had some sunshine on the markets, particularly in the small and mid caps over the last 4 or 5 weeks. But the question of the week and the day is this rally and tariff induced sustainable, or is it more of a sort of like a, you know, a dead cat bounce, particularly in that sort of sweet spot of small and mid caps, Paul?
Well, I'm very surprised. We've had it's literally been a V-shape, hasn't it? I was looking at the charts this morning. We'd had a double bottom on all the main UK indices on 7th and 9th of April. And since then, we've had literally a V-shape recovery, which, I mean, I wasn't expecting that. Were you?
No, not at all. No, I mean, I think obviously, you know, the markets did get battered because of the, you know, the effectively the really high trade tariffs and between China and the US. And once they'd actually rationalized those down to sort of like 10% and 30%, people took that tail risk off the markets. I must admit the valuations in the States are still 22 times 2025 estimates, and the estimates are coming down. So it's not cheap. But I would say there's still seem to be lots of value in the small caps, though. You see them every single day.
Yeah, exactly. I actually put a video out this first thing this morning on my Substack where I searched for from the 9th of April being the low point in the spike down. And I've done a search of the entire market for the biggest percentage gainers since then, but also looking at the laggards. So I feel for my own personal investing, this is a time to be looking at top slicing things that have reached what I consider to be fair value. Good example being JD Weatherspoon. It shot up £2 from £5.50 to about £7.50. Well, that's good enough for me because it's now on a forward PE of 15 times. I've got my value. Job done. So I've sold that. So, and the one or two others I'm looking at maybe top slicing gains where I think the valuation is now reasonable or, you know, has recouped or maybe even got ahead of itself. And I'm looking at the laggards now and I'm buying stuff where I think actually that's been putting out good news, but it's barely budged. So that's the opportunity right now, I think. And I've done very well in previous early bull markets by using exactly this strategy. You know, recycle the money quickly from something that shot up 30, 40, 50%. Maybe sell a bit of them, 25% or 50% of them, and put the money into something equally good that hasn't budged. I think that's a great trading opportunity right now. Of course, if it's a bear market rally, then we could be going back down again. But I don't personally think it is. How about you, Paul? You tell me.
I mean, I think it depends on what your time horizons are. If you're sort of like talking months, then it's really a sort of like a throw of the dice. But if you're talking years, then I actually think today is as good a time to buy as there was 2 or 3 weeks ago. I think the tail risk between a sort of like a really hard trade war between China and the US has stopped. And I think that certainly between the US and Europe, they will reach a solution. It'll be painful, but it will reach a solution. Interest rates now definitely do seem to be coming down. Inflation, both sides Atlantic, yes, doesn't seem to have shot up at all. So I think that will come through. And what is the highest beta play on lower interest rates? It's small caps. And UK small caps are still cheap. And you see that through the M&A window because...
Yes,
you interviewed a CEO of a UK pawnbroker, H&T, about two or three months ago, I think it was.
Yeah,
anyway, it's been flashing green and buy on your list, and then they got bought out by a US competitor for a lovely 40% premium. So, any quick thoughts on that? And just sort of like, you know, it'd be reiterating that there's still value in the market.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to shine a light on it earlier this year because it was, 100% asset-backed on a PE of about 6 and a dividend yield of 5 or 6%. It just looked ridiculously cheap. So, yeah, I just thought, look, I'll shine a light on this with an independent interview with the CEO. I never charge because I like to be able to just ask anything I like. And bless my soul, a bid at a nice premium came through today. The only downside of it, Paul, I forgot to put it on my top 20 list of share ideas for this year, even though I've been super bullish on it for about a year, and I forgot to buy any. So I didn't own any myself. But, you know, I'm just happy the readers have made money on it. And it's this is, I think, the opportunity. We're looking at lots of stocks now. And we're saying, oh, it's cheap. It's always cheap. It never re-rates. But we need to find out if there's a similar but seven times larger company in America doing the same sort of thing. Because we're getting so many bids from America, aren't we, for UK companies. So I think that's a really, really good theme. And all the macro stuff we were talking about earlier, as we were saying back in March and April, the tariffs thing hardly affects any UK small caps directly. There are very few exporting directly into America. So the only real worry was any kind of global macro recession worries. So, and I think a lot of people have changed their minds about risk and are now looking at UK small caps and saying, well, actually, these things are dirt cheap. They could be takeover targets. And they're, funnily enough, they're resilient to a lot of macro pressures because they've got cashed up balance sheets in many cases. So, yeah, I'm hoping we're seeing a bit of a resurgence in interest in UK small caps. It looks like it. Tentative.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know you and your readers are keeping a list of sort of M&A targets. One, I'll just highlight potentially that you might want to add to the list. And I would say this is, you know, you can never guess a sort of M&A, but if there's one that in my portfolio that is worth people just putting onto the sort of the watch list, okay, I own a reasonable chunk in it. It's called Inspiration Healthcare, okay, and it's been through some real trials and tribulations. It's a fairly small company. But the reason why I mention it, okay, it does neonatal baby ventilators and warmers and stuff like this, which go into sort of like maternity units and intensive care units for babies. Okay, so it's basically a medical devices company, does consumables as well as let me put it on the chart. As well as sort of like the equipment. Now, the reason why I think it's of interest.
Let me stop you, Paul. Can you say the ticker when you say the name as well, just so I can?
It's IHC.
IHC. Thanks.
Yeah, I was just putting up the ticker's on the chart, but I was just putting it up. But it's a fairly small company. I'll just give you an indication. It's, what is it? It's roughly around that 16 million market cap. So the liquidity is not great. And it's been through trials and tribulations. It's had profit warnings. And it's just got through a really difficult 2024 with a new CEO. Now, the reason why I think it's of interest, okay, over the past 12 months, a trade buyer has been increasing its stake in this business from 5%. In May 2024 to 15% this morning, and it bought another 2%, I think probably off the old CEO. Okay, now I've looked at it. It's basically a private equity backed Israeli medical devices company that's trying to move into this sector. It won't make it won't make an offer until the 12th. It basically bought some shares, started buying them round about I think it was round about here. So about 25p. So it's given the restrictions of the 12-month look back on takeovers, it's unlikely to pop an offer in any time before then. It may do, but I think it will stay and accumulate. And it being a private equity, well-funded back, strategically wanted to get into this sector on a really low valuation, then I suspect, even through its all trials and tribulations, this business has been looking at it. And I would say, I would close to say it's been stalking it. So am I bullish on the underlying company? I think it could do a lot better. The execution has been tough. So, you know, the fundamentals are tough at the moment in medical. So don't get me wrong here, but I'm just putting it onto a potential M&A target, because this rarely you see a trade buyer with a strategic direction who wants to get into a sector like this, tripling its stake over 12 months when the company's been going through. So it looks as though it isn't buying it as an investment. It's buying it as something more strategic.
That's a really interesting angle on it. I hadn't spotted that, but while you've been talking, I've called it up. Menon Medical has a 15% stake. That must be the one. Now, the company fundamentals are not great, as you say. I mean, you can see that from the chart. It did warn on profits, I think, a couple of months ago, which is the last time I covered it. 18th of February, profit warning. But I think the balance sheet here is okay. Have you got any details on the balance sheet, Paul?
The balance sheet has got – the debt has actually decreased from its worst, but it's still not massively. The debt is about – sorry, not great. It's around about 8 million, I think.
Oh, it's got net debt, has it?
So it's got net debt, yeah.
£16 million net tangible asset value, though. So that looks to be positive.
And they've got they've got some big orders. They're basically – which have been taken and they're monetized in H1. However, they're coming out there. They are coming out with their prelims over the next month or the next few weeks.
Okay.
One of the big problems they've had is this Middle Eastern order that we got delayed and delayed and delayed.
Oh, that rings a bell. Yeah.
And they executed it towards the back end of they signed at the back end of last year, and they've delivered half of it already. Now, I'm pretty sure Menon Medical know that this order has happened because it's in the same geographical area, you know, because it's actually to Egypt to help the relief of babies coming out of Gaza, I think.
Oh, gosh.
That's my understanding of it. But anyway, all I would say is that, you know, don't run into this. But if anybody wants a sort of like a very speculative, and let's claim less than 50%, less than maybe even less than 25%, the speculative M&A potential here, it's rarely you see a trade buyer tripling its position and is not seriously interested in, particularly a well-funded private equity-backed trade buyer.
Yeah, no, interesting angle on that. That sounds interesting. I'll have a look into that. I'll make sure I cover the prelims next month. Interesting idea. Thanks, Paul.
Okay, good. Well, we've got had plenty of building products stocks reporting this past and DIY the past week. We've got a question coming in from Zoo Look. He's asking about Eurocell, which does sort of like doors and windows and building products, largely, well, a lot for the RMI market, the repairs, maintenance and improvement market in the UK. Came out with a profit downgrade. How did you read it? And also in the wider sector, because I think Michelmersh likewise came out with an AGM trading update as well.
That's right. Yeah, we cover both of those today, me and the team. We felt... why is that not loading up? Sorry, I can't get my thing to load the correct page. We thought the thing with the Eurocell announcement is that it wasn't actually that bad. They said that figures are going to be profitability in the current calendar financial year, I think it is going to be about level with last year. But then they made quite a big acquisition a couple of months ago. So they're rightly quoting the numbers before the benefit of the acquisition. So profits could still go up a bit this year. The main issue with Eurocell is I think it was an error of forecasting. The existing market consensus forecasts are far too high. They're showing a sort of 37% increase in earnings per share. And they're now saying, well, it'll be nil. So, you know, you could look at that and say, well, that's a massive miss. But on the other hand, did anyone actually believe that forecast in the first place? Probably not. So I think it was a mistake on their part putting unrealistic numbers out there via the brokers. The companies need to be conservative with their forecasting. And I think this is the reason why we all looked at the profit warning today and thought, well, actually, it's not that bad. And the market seems to have thought the same thing. It opened down about 9%, and it's kind of been recovering to about down about 5% when I last looked half an hour ago. So we like it. Strong balance sheet. It's got cyclical recovery upside. You get decent divvies. Management are cutting costs. Although you do think to yourself, if they cut cost any more, are they going to be reducing service levels in all the branches? You know, they've got a couple of hundred branches. I was discussing this with my colleague Dave, and we were saying this is a disadvantage of being a listed company. If you're privately owned, you can say, no, we're going to maintain the service levels and we'll gain market share long term. If you're a listed company, you've got profit targets to meet and you have to slash costs, which means service levels could reduce. So, I mean, what's your thought? But yeah, overall, we thought bit of a storm in a teacup with Eurocell, and we still like the share.
Yeah, I thought the only sort of like profit downgrade just really related to the repair, maintenance and improvement market. It's big ticket items, and it always lags effectively the new build housing market and the sort of like the super sort of fast starting DIY market, because people are happy to go down Wickes and B&Q to pick up a few screwdrivers and a few nails and put a sort of a new bathroom shower in and stuff. That's when they feel a bit better and they do that. That's easy because that's small, fairly quick. And then when it comes to new build, it has been delayed, but it's now starting to take. You see it through planning permissions, you see it through the house building. But when it comes to big ticket, repair, maintenance and improvement, then it's paid for by households who eventually need a bit of time and a bit of encouragement to start paying some serious bread out for big, you know, improvements. So I just think this is timing. All it is, just don't worry about it too much. It'll come good by the end of this year. You'll see, as long as the housing market, the new build, keeps moving forward, which it seems to be, all the house builders are saying it, I am absolutely convinced the RMI market will follow it 6 months, 9 months later.
Yeah, I think it will. And I mean, Nexus, the groundworks company today, said they're seeing early signs of improvement in the house building sector, and the house builders themselves are all reporting that. So we know the cyclical upturn is in the pipeline, don't we? So yeah, I agree with you. Bit of a storm in a teacup with Eurocell. Fundamentally a very sound company and good value. And we also had a nice update from Wickes, funnily enough, that you just mentioned.
DIY guys.
So revenue's up 6%. The market, the shares on that have shot up this year. So I feel that's up with events now, already anticipating recovery to a certain extent. But you get a 5% dividend yield with Wickes, and also it's got a nice balance sheet with net cash. So there's still lots and lots of things. I think we should definitely be buying more building products, companies, selectively. I've only got a handful in my portfolio. I've got Brickability. I think that's the only one, actually. I definitely need to be buying more of these things. Yeah, look at that. Yeah. Wickes, tremendous, right? So we need, I think the clock's ticking on these. We need to be buying more of these, Paul.
Yeah, and I think you just need to be careful how you sift through them in terms of where that company plays in the cycle. Because let's be clear about it, okay? The DIY boys, which is cheap, low value, fast turnaround tickets, do much better than the big ticket, sort of heavy lifting sort of purchases. So that's why Wickes has started moving faster. The house builders, the new builds, will come second, because obviously they come from the housing associations and the house builders investing their balance sheets into getting that moving. And the last one is me and you, Paul, deciding I want a £50,000 extension on the house or a new loft conversion, all this sort of stuff. And that comes in later. Or alternatively, you get people like Jude Bellingham next door who decides to build a £20 million house. But you know, those purchases are late. So you just think about where you're playing in that cycle when it comes through. And if I was playing in it, I would play in the late cycle building products and area, because they haven't seen any improvement yet. Whereas the early cycle, the Wickses have.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, for me, that's kind of overthinking it. For me personally, I tend to probably take a more simplistic view on this. I mean, we have seen some of the other basic building materials things also rise recently. There was Marshalls, wasn't there? I think that's reported recently, and that went up. And the one I think neither of us really like has got up about 50% is SIG, the insulation thing. And I mean, what a rubbish company. But again, people are maybe looking at it saying, operationally geared recovery, massive revenues. Yeah. You only need 1 or 2 points on the operating margin, and you're off to the races, aren't you? So maybe we have to turn our sort of value aversion to the worst companies on its head and say, well, some of those could actually be the biggest percentage risers, couldn't they? So yeah. All very interesting, fascinating.
Yeah. One thing that would you to like, you know, tie the bow on house build, I'm sorry, the building products with Brickability, okay? Mm. And it had its CEO, Frank Hanna, okay, used to be the CEO of Michelmers, okay?
Right.
And the reason why I mention it, because Michelmers came out with a trading update today. I own Michelmers, right? And Michelmers is also swapping its CEO. So there wouldn't be a huge leap of faith, yeah, at some point, given this Michelmers has been a takeover target with, who is it basically? I can't remember what it is. It's one, either Ipstock or Fortier. I think it was Fortier, yeah. I think it was, before, only about 6 months. It would not be a massive leap of faith if Mr. Hanna, who loves Michelmers, decided actually this is a brilliant business to join with Brickability, which is bigger. So an interesting combination. And this one, both this Michelmers likewise came out with a sort of inline statement today, but it's got a big exposure to RMI, about 50% of it, not quite as large as Duracell. So that's why it wasn't moving forward. In fact, if anything, it's susceptible to price sensitivity on it.
I was just going to mention that price sensitivity was the only thing that we were slightly perturbed about with Michelmers. Although because it's premium end of the bricks and similar products, you'd think it had more pricing power. But it seemed to be, we weren't quite sure what it was saying there. I think Michelmers said they've put through 5% price rises, but they're monitoring. They also then said there's issues with demand. You know, it's very competitive. And so we don't know quite how this is going to play out, but we think it's very good. We're moderately positive on Michelmers. Nice balance sheet. It's got a bit of net cash and obviously cyclical upside that you're not having to pay up front for. Same with Brick. I'm personally in Brickability. I think that's very, very good. Forward PE is only about 8. Well, given that we're probably at the bottom of the cycle earnings, that doesn't make sense to me. You're getting the upside on Brickability in for free.
Yeah. Well, but I'm sure Brickability, given, I mean, I know it does quite a lot of volume, but I bet you it supplies a lot of repair, maintenance and improvement as well. And because it brings a lot of imported stuff, which is basically the RMI. Which is, anyway, they're both similar businesses. One has got crate bricks and brick slips, and the other one buys them all in, which is Brickability. Okay.
Yeah. No, interesting sector. Definitely this is one of the sectors I want to really get stuck into and find some bargains and start buying some stuff. Yeah.
Okay, good. The other big news we've had this week, which is a good broad point, is what should investors do with sort of bombshell announcements? We've had two from mid caps. We've had, one large cap. We've had Marks and Spencer with its sort of online services being hit by a cyber attack that seems to have prolonged for about 3 or 4 weeks and stopped them taking online orders. And we also had Cranswick through the Daily Mail. Just more broadly, how would you sort of treat those? But let's start with sort of like, you know, M&S, et cetera. Seems to be quite a big issue. If you wanted to tuck into their Indian takeaway dinners on a Friday night, you're going to struggle getting one probably this week and the last two.
Yeah, I mean, they put out a PR announcement, didn't they? Basically, on the RNS saying, focusing on the impact on customers and customers' details and things. But that's not the issue. The issue is the supply chain disruption. That's what I wanted to hear about. In fact, they didn't mention anything on that. Just made me mistrust their communications, to be honest. But I think they've since issued a statement through, I think, maybe the the retail trade press, I think, saying that they're doing a £100 million insurance claim that they think they're covered for. So that's a positive, isn't it? I mean, M&S shares have dropped a lot on this. So I'm leaning towards seeing this more as a buying opportunity. But because it's not actually particularly, I wouldn't say it's compelling value at 350, 355. But yeah, I'm leaning a bit more positively. And what we've seen with other cyber attacks on numerous small to mid caps over the last few years is the share prices tend to recover quite quickly.
Yeah. But this one hasn't, unfortunately.
This one hasn't yet. I mean, I think that's because people have, certainly in some of the shops, people have seen almost empty shelves. But there again, other readers have said everything's fine in my local branch. So you can't judge it from one branch, can you? But I think they need to come clean about what is going on with the supply chain problems. Because Co-op is absolutely having a nightmare. Mm. My local Co-op, it's almost empty. And it's only a small one. It's been like that for weeks. They've got much, much bigger problems, I think. But they're not listed, so we don't care.
Yeah. Well, it's also worth thinking about. If you're ever considering buying the likes of Tesco's or Sainsbury's, which are, then you can guarantee these guys will be selling lots of premium products through their distribution, through their stores, to make up for the problems that M&S is having. Maybe even all Primark as well. I don't know.
I don't know how it'll pan out, Paul, but I think, you know, look, M&S has come off from what, over £4 to about £3.55. So if you like the company, and as you say, going back to your time scales thing, if you're just looking at it long term, this will be long forgotten, won't it, in a year or two. So I would say, I'm leaning more towards seeing this as a buying opportunity than not. But you've got to then be prepared to hold through any further bad news, haven't you? And M&S is strong balance sheet. So even if things get worse or get a lot worse, you don't have to worry about it going bust, do you? So I think broadly positive. Are we on the same page on that,
Paul? Yeah, no, it's only 12 times PE. It looks like, I mean, I'm not into retailers, but I'm with you. I think people should take a longer term view when it comes to sort of like potential disasters, unless it's absolutely permanent and terminal. I mean, another one was Cramswick, wasn't it? It got absolutely leathered in the press. That Daily Mail, I think it was, did a sort of like undercover expose of how it was treated.
That was horrible, wasn't it?
But it was only one farm, and you are now starting to see it come down. I mean, it all depends on what your time scales are. For a trade, it's probably, you know, your probabilities are probably, you know, better going long than short. But, it all depends on what you're looking for.
It does. And I think the other thing you've got to think about is, I mean, there's nothing worse than animal cruelty, is there, really? Yeah. And how many fund managers will be looking at that and saying, do I really want that on my fact sheet going out at the end of the quarter? Do I want to have to start to explain to the clients why we're still holding it? Do you know what I mean? So that might only be a marginal issue, but that could be a point. My main problem with Cranswick is I just don't think it's worth the current share price. Yeah. 19 times, nearly 20 times, 2% yield. I mean, yes, the shares have done fabulously well over the last two or three years. So maybe when a shock like that happens, it's time to reassess it and say, well, actually, with this extra risk and this extra disastrous PR, maybe that's a good time to be, you know, trimming some or getting rid of them altogether. I don't know. But no, it doesn't appeal to me. So I'm leaning negatively towards Cranswick a little bit. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I would say because of the sunny weather, we've had lots of barbecues everywhere in the UK. These guys will have absolutely ripped it in terms of, you know, sort of like sales through the supermarkets, premium. And they haven't got any their own brands, I don't think. So essentially, they're protected like that. You know, to the consumer, it's not going to make any difference, to perfectly honest, you know. And would you go into Tesco's and say, well, I don't want to buy this meat because it's Cranswick? You wouldn't know.
No, you wouldn't know. But maybe the canny supermarket buyers might say, well, you know, we're going to have to, for reputational damage, we're going to have to ask you for a 3 or 4% discount. I don't know. It's a possibility, isn't it?
True. Okay, we've got a question from Mark Spooner, a company we never talk about. It's called really high quality life sciences business, Diaceutics, basically DXRX is the ticker. It does sort of like precision medicine diagnostics, and it's an information service that brings effectively drug, it acts for drug companies to help commercialize their new therapies in the market faster and also to get them through sort of like clinical trials, because it helps basically target those patients who have the correct genomics and the correct, you know, personal sort of like DNA to the exact treatment to improve drugs, things like immunotherapy, which are very personal to people. And it also helps the labs do the diagnostics to get those. And it also helps, obviously, the hospitals, because they get better outcomes for patients. So it's a win. It's been going through a lot of sort of like change over the last 2 or 3 years, but now really does seem to be motoring. I think the sales came out with the trading up. The sales are up 35%. Good shareholder register. I don't know whether you've had a look at this for Mark at all, Paul.
Yeah, it hasn't reported recently, though, but I've just called up my notes. I looked at it on the 28th of January when it put out its calendar 2024 trading update. Basically, adjusted EBITDA marginally ahead of consensus. Cash of 12.7 million, so that's about 10% of the market cap. I've just concluded here, though, that it's difficult to value because it's growing, but there's no track record of profitability. That's the problem. So those are particularly difficult types of companies to value, aren't they? So for that reason, I'm just on the fence on this one. I need more track record of whether it's it sounds more like your kind of thing, Paul.
I've tried to buy, but actually even though it's a sort of like a what's the market cap around about 110 million, I've struggled historically to get any liquidity in it, and at certain set prices. But I think it's a high recurring type, you know, revenue business. It's got really good technology, 80% gross margins. Yes, it competes against some of the large CROs, so it's not in a market of its own, but it's pretty unique, and it saves the pharmaceutical biopharma companies a shed load of money, accelerates the commercialization of their, you know, huge billion-dollar type drugs. And now it's done a lot of heavy lifting in terms of its platform, plus is going into the States quite hard as well. So I would say if there's ever a sell-off in this one, you know, I would definitely consider it. It's not cheap. It's trading at about 2.5 times sales, but less than 14 times EBITDA. And I can see this one in a few years' time being worth a lot more. But
it's totally speculative, though, Paul. I mean, 110 million market cap for something that's basically never really made a profit. That's the trouble, isn't it? I mean,
I don't think it's speculative. I actually think it's really moved. It's coming to commercialization. But anyway, yeah, perhaps we'll beg to the different. Another one on that, which another life sciences company, is Tristel, or Tristel, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Something dioxide. I can't remember what it is. Basically,
chlorine
dioxide. Yeah. Yeah, basically disinfectants for small instruments in hospitals, things like ears, nose, and mouth, and throat, and all this sort of stuff. It's got a very good position in the UK, been growing really well overseas as well, and now just had a bridgehead into the US and won an FDA approval for one of its products in ophthalmology, I think it was. I don't know whether you had a look at this. It's very cash generative and highly profitable, actually.
Yeah, we like it. We followed this for donkey's years. It's got overvalued. I think we were moaning, belly aching about it being overvalued for a long time, but we actually turned positive on this one last year, I think, because the valuation came down. It grew into its valuation nicely. Very nice recovery from COVID. It said, look, hospitals are cancelling orders because, you know, they're not doing elective surgery, but the orders will come back. And sure enough, they did. And I love it when companies tell you, right, this is going to happen, don't worry too much, and it actually turns out like that. So they got a really good tick in the box for that one. Valuation came down to a very attractive level a few weeks ago, but it shot back up again, hasn't it? It's risen about 50% from the April low, so we think it's probably back to a fairly sensible price now. PE of 25, 4% yield, good divvies on Tristel. One of my readers said he nearly had a breakdown yesterday because in yesterday's podcast I mispronounced the names of three companies.
Did you have a couple of tinnies, did you, beforehand?
No. I normally do the podcast sober because you just have to. But anyway, Tristel. I think it's Tristel. I think it's good. Probably, though, the short-term trade's been missed there. I think we've had the the short-term gains, linking back to the point you made right at the start. I mean, it's barely a blip on that chart, is it? But it's actually... I can't read the small print on that. But what period is that chart over, Paul?
That's a 30-year chart, that is.
Well, 30-year?
Yeah, but it only goes back to 2005, so it's about 20 years. It's supposed to be 30, but it didn't start trading. I mean, unlike you, I love the stock. I mean, I actually bought here, I think it was, something around about 30p, but I sold too early at about a quid or quid 20, which was great. I mean, I had a great trade. I mean, not trade, you know, as investment. But I missed a huge amount.
I did too, actually. I was on that one when it was about £1. And I think I just got bored with it because it went sideways for a few months and bought something else.
if you make money but you don't see the top, then I can live with it. It's not a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, good. We've got a question from Richard Pavey. He's asking about Rank, which has been in the news. It's basically owns the online casinos, Grosvenor in the UK, also owns Mecca, the bingo halls, and has got an online business. Shares have done really well. I think it's been benefiting by the number of new slot machines that the government are allowing to be put into physical casinos in its Grosvenors, and therefore people just love feeding these things. What's your view on this one?
Well, I was a bit late to the party on this, but I covered it in yesterday's report when I picked up from the RNS. Apparently, the government's issued a statutory instrument regarding the timing of casinos being allowed to install more machines. And the date is 22nd of July. And anyway, the CEO of Rank said this was, quote, very good news for Rank, unquote. And he then said, quote, we'll now accelerate their investments in new gaming machines, and they're going to increase the number of gaming machines in the Grosvenor estate, the physical site, by 65%. Now, these machines are very profitable, so but they're limited in number. So that's really good news for Rank, I think. So, yeah, we like this one. We're amber green on it. I haven't seen any updated forecasts, though, so I don't know whether this was a known upside thing that's already in the forecast. Do you know that?
Well, it looks as though from the share price, people didn't. They didn't really appreciate what the jump was. I remember, it was funny, actually. I know it sounds crazy, but around that Christmas, I think it was, you know, like Christmas of 2023, okay? I went to a local party and I started talking to the CEO of Grosvenor Casinos, okay?
Oh, right.
He goes to... Anyway, he's a great chap, and I was telling him what the business case was, investment case. He said, well, actually, over the next 12 months, we're going to be putting a shed load of new slot machines. So I liked it from that point. The reason why I didn't go in was twofold, was just because of the sector. You've got to get your head around sort of gambling, you know, sort of stuff. And then you know, the government also indicated round about the budget that they could put in a punitive sort of like windfall tax on all things.
Oh, that was it. Yeah.
You know, so I haven't actually owned it, but I've been positive on it for about 18 months, and the shares have done very well. I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it, really? You know, you could have, should have, but didn't. So it's one of those, you know.
Mind you could have got done for you. You could have ended up in Wormwood Scrubs if you'd been done for insider dealing after that.
No, it wasn't insider dealing. He said it's well known, just it hasn't been reflected into the.
He
wasn't telling me. I mean, let's be clear about it. It's only moved the last few weeks, hasn't it?
I was only joking. But no, we think it's good. And actually, on 10th of April, Rank put out a trading update for Q3 where it said revenues were up 12% like for like. Well, 12% like for like is really good. Mm. And you'll get the operational gearing of that. So we actually flagged it positively back at 84p on the 10th of April. So, yeah. Balance sheet's not the best. It is negative net tangible asset value, but I think it's tolerable. It's not a dangerous balance sheet. Like a couple of the large cap gambling groups have got absolutely hopelessly insolvent balance sheets. I mean, really the worst, you know, billions negative. Yeah. But Rank actually is okay. So, yeah, we like it. We think it's good.
Good. Okay, we've got Tony's asking about Venture Life, which came out with a big disposal this week. It does sort of like healthcare consumer products. Has got two parts of the business. It's about two thirds of its own brands, and about a third is third party. And it sold its manufacturing and distribution business for the whole business, plus it sold its third party brands to this strategic investor for €62 million, which gives it a shed load of cash, and it gives it it can pay off its debt. More importantly, it underlines what the value is of the business. It did it on 11 times EBITDA multiple. And I was just working the numbers, actually. And I think currently the shares for Venture Life, for its own brands, is trading at roughly around about 4 times EBITDA going forward. So anyway, what was your take on it?
Well, I've always been suspicious of Venture Life. I couldn't put my finger on it, but it's just done some odd things in the past. It did a large fundraise at about £1 or £1.10, and the directors sold most of their shares in it, and then the shares crashed afterwards. Do you know what I mean? It's been one of those shares I've never really trusted. But I have to say, I've changed my mind on that given this news this week. I mean, that was a cracking deal, wasn't it, when they announced it? It was the bulk of the company's market cap. Now, it does have some debt, so they're going to pay off the debt, but they'll then have a cash pile of, I'm thinking, was it 30 million quid or something?
Yeah, 32 million, yeah.
And they've also got a 50 million, which sounds very excessive, but a 50 million pound borrowing facility, and they're talking about deploying both. So they're really going to have some decent firepower. So my view now on VLG is it's a straightforward play on whether the directors spend that money wisely. The next acquisition, if they buy some really good stuff that adds value, then you could do very well on it. But since I don't know what they're going to use the cash for, and I've no way of, I don't really know anything about the management, then to me it doesn't particularly appeal. But it's much, much better than it was this time last week, for sure. But you know far more about it than me, Paul. So what's give me your more considered view?
Yeah. All I would say is basically just look at the value, underlying value to third parties. You know, because if you say what's more valuable, third party brands, are you not your not your brands or your actual own brands, which are going pretty, which are growing pretty well. And so everybody would say, well, if you own a brand, then it's more valuable than if it's somebody else owns it, if you're going to try and sell it. Okay, but they sold the lesser value part of the business for 11 times EBITDA. Okay, historical, but 11 times EBITDA. And that's less than what, you know, the big FMs, the big consumer healthcare products business go for. But they sold it for 11 times, right? If you use a 10 times multiple on the existing business that's staying, okay, the brokers are reckoning it's 7.7 million of EBITDA. 10 times that is 77 mil. You then add 30 mil for, or just over 33 mil for the actual
net cash.
You get 110 mil. There's 126 million shares. That's 90p plus that you've got pretty much backed by external valuation. So frankly, I would just say, well, okay, it's trading at roughly 50p. It looks about half of what it should be. And the brokers now has put it up to £1, its target price, which I can easily see, to be perfectly honest. But that would just
interesting.
Just look at what the products go for by an external player.
Yeah, and I would say there was a very good broker note on this. I think it was Cavendish who did a post-disposal analysis of it, which was really useful. I think it's worth a look, this one. It doesn't really appeal to me personally, but I can see it, I would say it looks a lot more credible now than it did before this deal, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's move to another potential, I would say, potential takeover target. But what would you think? McFarlane basically came out with results this week, now doing a buyback, does sort of like high grade sort of packaging and products and stuff like this for, you tell me more about it, but it's trading at a pretty low valuation. It looks to me like an H&T, you know, it's sort of like a...
You know what? I was going to say that as well. It's always cheap, isn't it? It's just like H&T, although completely different businesses. Yeah, I like it. I'm stubbornly staying a green positive on this one because the numbers just stack up great. We covered it a couple of days ago, 8.5 times PE. Largely ungeared balance sheet, just with a little bit of gearing. Does lots of small bolt-on acquisitions, based in Scotland, I believe, and it's mainly a distributor of packaging. So I think it has a small manufacturing division as well, but it doesn't really make any money. It's just a packaging distributor, low PE, sound balance sheet. Do you remember what the dividends are there, Paul? I don't think it's huge. Is it 4%-ish?
I've got it down. It's what have I got? I've got 3.6, yeah.
3.6, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's just one of those. You could look at it as a trading share. If you zoom out on the chart, you know, when it gets about £1.40, £1.50, you could just bank the profit and then just wait for it to drop to a quid again. that's what it seems to do. But meanwhile, you're collecting in a reasonable dividend and you don't really have to worry about any issues with the company. Seems to be well managed. The other thing is, if you zoom out to sort of 10 or 15 year chart, it's actually got a very good long-term track record. So I like McFarlane. It's probably a little bit too boring for me at this stage, but as you say, somebody might come along and bid for it. But we did have some quite large cap packaging distributors or manufacturers who were bid for, and they were not at high multiples.
Yes.
That's the only thing I would say. So if a bid does come in, it's not going to be a massive premium. It'll just be somebody bidding maybe 20, 30% premium for it, which is not badly exciting, is it? So do you like it, Paul?
Well, in the consolidating sector, if it's cash generative, then I think there's every chance that a private equity guy could buy this. Just we wake up one morning and it'll be 40% higher.
Yeah, you could well be right. Yeah, I mean, I like it. But yeah, very frustrating share for shareholders. So I think you do tend to get then a revolving door type of thing with the shareholders. People just get put, you know, if a share goes nowhere for 2 or 3 years, most people, no matter how we classify ourselves as investors, most of us will probably think, oh, sod it, I'll sell it. Won't we? I mean, you know, we're all human.
Yeah, no, it needs to make progress. I've held Alico for over a decade. So, but that's...
Yeah, that's gone up. That's all right. Yeah, that's all
right. Okay, we've got a question from Rising Bull 1985. He's asking about Foresight Group, which I think is a private equity type, sort of invests in sort of like private equity, private credit, venture capital sort of stuff. I don't know if you've ever had a look at this one at all as a potential sort of like a acquisition target.
I'm getting about 5 or 6 things called Foresight coming up. Is it? Have you got the ticker?
Yeah, FSG.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see the one. It doesn't ring any bells. Do you want to give us your view, Paul, while I search?
Yeah, I did speak to a fund manager some time ago, about 6 months, and they liked it. I was just looking at the book value is 82p, and the shares are... Okay, so it's obviously a lot more than net tangible asset. It trades at about 12 times PE. Falling to 9 times next year. I guess the key question is how sticky the recurring revenues are in terms of the performance fees and the ongoing fees. And I would say because if it's a private equity house and a private credit house, then you've got great visibility. And there is actually quite a lot of consolidation in this because this is the best type of sort of fund manager because you can see what, you know, the revenue's coming through and high margin, but you live and die by the investments you make and how and turning it around. So you'd have to go through all their investments.
Yeah, actually I did cover this one back in January, 9th of January. It put out a Q3 trading update. Assets under management were flat, it said. But this was something that interesting caught my eye. It said it's on track to double core profits in the next 5 years. Well, that's pretty impressive. I mean, okay, it's an aspiration, but on track to do that. Anyway, I concluded moderately positive on this. I've said potentially interesting, good track record of profit growth, but it's on a value share rating. So, yeah, I liked it in January at £3.68. Do we know what the price is now, Paul?
Yeah, it's about £4.
Oh, okay, so that's gone up a bit. There was something today, another speciality fund manager called Pollen Street.
Yes.
Has a very interesting update. I was looking at that. Now, that one actually is a hybrid between an asset manager and an investor itself. Mm-hmm. So it's taking balance sheet risk of making debt investments into companies. So Pollen Street's got a very impressive track record, P&L-wise. Mm-hmm. But the trouble is there's investment risk and you're reliant on it putting accurate revaluations on some of the investments. Yes. So I don't know if you know. Do you know that one, Paul?
No, I don't know it. I don't know Pollen Street that well either. But you need to go through the balance sheet. But I think both of them are very well respected. There's another one as well, which is a bit bigger, which is, you know, I think they give you great visibility. The only sort of variability you get is on performance fees, and when it comes up to, you know, finally close the venture capital, then you've got to replace it. So comes down to the ability, the availability of capital and how much capital wants to go into private equity, and also then recycling your proceeds to be able to get disposals. But they've got a good reputation, I think.
Yeah, and also I noticed generally the fund management sector, which you and I have been talking about for a while, haven't we? Mm. Some of the incredibly attractive valuations in them, but also some value traps of funds that are just seeing continuous outflows because they're having such poor performance. Well, a lot of them have had a big rebound in the last 5-6 weeks, haven't they? Mm. Aberdeen was the only one I own currently. Yeah. And that's had a nice bounce, still very, very cheap, 10% yield and trading below net tangible asset value. The other one I liked, which I didn't buy, was Jupiter. I haven't seen if that, because that had 60% of the market cap in net cash. So, and Premier Miton's bounced a lot. I wanted to buy some, but I didn't have any cash. So I think, again, though, are these just dead cap bounces that you sell into, or are they a turning point? Any opinion, Paul?
I think you've chosen the right one. If you were going to go into fund managers, I would go to Aberdeen Asset, every day of the week. I think it's the top pick in that sector. Good value, great balance sheet, and owns Interactive Investors. So, that would be the one I would go to. Okay, we've got a question from David Raywood. He's asking about a company we never talk about, and it sort of cuts a lot of opinion left and right. It's ITM Power, the hydrogen electrolyzer business that's got some big contracts just recently. The shares have just turned, actually. They've gone from about 25p to 43. I don't know if you've ever had a look at this one. It used to be an absolute darling when we were all locked down, I think.
Yeah, I have looked at it. We've flagged this a couple of times in my podcasts in the last week or two. Mm. There's been an interesting flurry of our order wins, RNSs. Now, the only problem with it, and there was literally one about every day for about 3 or 4 days. That's why it caught my eye. Now, the unusual thing with ITM is that it's got an immensely strong balance sheet. It's got over £200 million in cash on the balance sheet. Now, it is a heavy cash burner and serious, it loses and burns tens of billions every year. But it's got 200 million quid in the bank. And I think the most recent statement said that actually the cash burn had reduced. But I suspect that was timing differences and maybe getting cash up front from customers. I think the underlying cash burn is still bad. So it's certainly worth people having a look at. The only thing I would say is that if you've got something that's mostly backed by net cash, your upside percentage on the share price is fairly limited, because if it doubles from 200 million market cap to 400 million market cap, then you've basically gone from valuing the business itself at zero to 200 million, which is a bit of a stretch. But look, I know nothing about the products. I mean, are these sort of work? And we should all be buying it if this is world-class stuff that, is going to take over the world. I mean, you're much more technical than me, Paul. Have you looked?
It is world-class. And the other one is, there's another one, isn't there? There's another one on Ceres Power, isn't there? Which does a similar, it doesn't quite the same, but it's another one in the big. We've got great technology in the UK. It's just that you've got to make a view at top level what the adoption is of hydrogen, green hydrogen. And it all depends on how much effectively renewable energy the grid produces that you can then use to create effectively, green hydrogen. Because if you've got shed loads, then it's really good because you can, but you've got to have a storage. Per place, and you've got to have lots of spare power. I think it could well be a very good fuel source, but hydrogen is difficult to compress. It's energy storage, and also it is expensive to generate. And of course, if you putting hydrogen in your car or into a plane is a big leap of faith if you ever get a combustion.
Yeah, I heard somewhere it leaks. Apparently, it's very susceptible to leaking as well, isn't it? And you have to use so much energy to bottle it effectively. People are saying, well, what's the benefit? Yeah, I suppose, is it the sort of thing where you'd connect, if it's very windy, you'd connect up all the turbines generating all this surplus electricity? Is that the idea with it?
It's a great green hydrogen. The idea is you use the free energy from renewables, from solar or from, which you're not going to take it into the grid, and then you store it in the hydrogen rather than storing it through a big battery. It's an alternative storage, but you need a place you can store the hydrogen. It's quite a lot of infrastructure involved on it. It all comes down to your view on that. Okay, let's switch.
What do we think ITM is doing that's unique then? Has it got some sort of patented
Yes, it has. Yes, it. I'd have to look at it and remember and recall, but yeah. I've had a look at it. It basically, I think it helps convert the green, effectively the green electricity, into hydrogen, whereas Ceres Power helps convert the electricity back into hydrogen. I can't remember. It's a different parts of the actual.
It's so difficult, isn't it, to pick a winning future technology and then to pick the right player in that sector. You've got, I mean, your chances of getting both bets right are very slim, aren't they, I would imagine.
Yeah, good. Okay, we've got changing sectors, luxury watches. We've got a couple of people asking about watches of Switzerland. We've got JKR Investing, and we've also got another chap asking about it. I can't remember what he's like. I've missed him. But anyway, yeah, so watches of Switzerland came out with quite a good positive trading update. Is it today or yesterday?
Today.
And it saw growth in the second half from America and from the UK, which is quite surprising. Got a lot of moving parts, though. It's got an increasing gold price. Obviously, you know, for its products, it's got the tariff risk because most of these things are produced in Switzerland and then it exported to the States, where its biggest market is. And also it's got that whole discretionary spend. Can people want to buy a £10,000 Rolex, you know, sort of stuff? But it does seem to be bucking the train. Anyway, how do you see it?
Yes, I think JKR Investing. I think that's Jacob, who I had a nice chat with a little while ago. Yeah, nice guy. Watchers of Switzerland. I've always dismissed this personally because I just don't get this whole business of buying ridiculously expensive watches because, you know, I'm not the market. I've got a £15.99 Casio on my wrist.
I've got a claim on £5.
Yeah, so I don't get the whole fancy watches thing. But nevertheless, I can read the figures. And I did, this one warned on profits, didn't it? When I think the second hand, was it? Something happened, didn't they, to the supply arrangements with Rolex, I think it was.
Yes.
It warned on profits. Well, I looked at it with fresh eyes today, and I think it's quite good, actually. Mm. It's dropped a lot. The balance sheet, you know, I always check the balance sheets just to reduce risk and skew risk reward in my favor a little bit. Yeah, here we are. Quite big, 915 million market cap, rose 4% today so far on a trading update. Revenue's quite good, actually, up 12%. This is for FY April 2025. The US was strong, up 16% in constant currency. Anyway, I won't read out the whole RNS, but basically in line with market expectations, which is good for a company that's warned on profits. You just want the comfort of knowing things are not getting any worse. Isn't giving any clear guidance, though, for April 26 yet, which, little balance sheet's fine. Modest net debt, 0.7 times EBITDA. We quite like this. My colleague John and I looked at it and we concluded Amber Green, which is moderately positive at £4.80 a share. We think it's quite good. We do think the sign of a turnaround and it's quite good value. So, yeah, we quite like it. One, I know you don't really look at these things, Paul, do you? But have you checked it out?
I would say I can understand why they don't give guidance because they've had a boom in the States ahead of the tariffs, okay? Because if you wanted to buy a Rolex or a secondhand one, then you did it before the tariffs kicked in, okay? How much of that is pull through demand? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And then I would also say is that I'd want to get my head around how many shops they have in duty-free areas. And if they have them in duty-free, you know, in the airport, does it avoid the tariffs? Probably not. It reduces the sales tax, but probably not the tariffs. You know, in the States and stuff. So I'd get my head around that. But no, it wouldn't be something I would rush in for.
Yeah, those are really good points this needs proper research, doesn't it? For sure.
Yeah. Another one with proper research. John Tillery saying that there's no salted nuts at the Marks and Spencer in Chiswick, which isn't very good. Thank you, John. And then equally, we've had some very good research from Peter Oakcroft. He's saying the PME electrolyzers, the best renewable product is ITM. So he seems to know that one, which is useful to know. Okay, we've had lots of questions on, again, in the plumbing area. But we've got Victorian Plumbing, Hawkeye Fortune. There's about five other people who are also asking about it. Quick update on Victorian Plumbing. I think they came out with, was it a bit of a softer trade? They'd bought MFI and therefore they're going to put a lot of investment into flat pack sort of sofas and stuff like this, as well as their traditional sort of all things bathroom related. Anyway, how did you sort of like see it?
we looked at this one. That was this week, wasn't it? Was it
yesterday? It was, yeah.
Yesterday, I think it was. Yeah. It dropped 24%, which we were really surprised at, actually. Although, if you look at the chart, about half of that was giving up a recent surge, you know. So it's a, but it's it fell and then it carried on falling. What we think, we like the business. Victorian Plumbing, we think, is quite a good business, owner managed as well, which we always like. The problem with this update was that they said, oh, we bought the MFI brand, which I think came as part of their acquisition of Victoria Plum, which they bought to shut down because it was an annoying, pesky competitor. And MFI, the MFI brand was part of that. So they said, right, we're going to revive the MFI brand. Not a bad idea. And move into, I think, sort of flat pack bedroom furniture, I think, is the idea. It was MFI, for anyone of our age, they were the flat pack kings of the 1980s and 90s, weren't they?
They were rubbish.
yeah, fell apart.
Rubbish. They were like the Leyland sort of like chugger.
Yeah, and Howden's Joinery was part of the same group, which has gone on to become hugely successful, I think. Anyway, to stop waffling, they said they're going to spend only 3 million quid of upfront spending on MFI, presumably marketing mainly and that sort of thing, because all the production will be outsourced to China, I would imagine. But we then noticed that the broker note, I think it might have been Pam Muir's, but it's on Research Tree anyway, seemed to be putting through considerably more reductions in earnings and revenue. So we feel, and I think the market obviously thought the same thing, this was kind of, the MFI thing was a bit of a cover for a surreptitious profit warning, we think. So I think that's why it got really slammed yesterday. Is that, what's it doing today? Is it down 2%?
Yeah, it's down 2%, yeah.
It's down a bit more. I've crunched the numbers. For me, 60p would be an attractive buying opportunity. Mm. Now, I'm notoriously tight when it comes to what price I'll pay for things.
Remember, we're going for a drink Saturday, so bring your wallet, okay?
No, I own a Jaguar, so I own a... Okay. I seem to have forgotten my wallet. So anyway...
I'm with you. I think I'm a bit still confused about the strategy of tying MFI flat pack furniture onto it. It just confuses the message, and it's frankly really competitive, that whole series. So unless they've got something really going to, I think they're going to spend a lot of money and not get anywhere. But hey, that'd be my take on it.
I mean, it's good to ask the question. I mean, one of the questions I asked in yesterday's report was, what experience do they have in? That sector. Now, it could well be they've got some middle managers or something who know about it. The other thing is, you know, they've got this great distribution network for third-party products. Well, a lot of its own brand, 50% gross margin at Victorian Plumbing, which is good. Mm. They spend a colossal amount on marketing. I mean, huge amount. It's about 30% of revenue. So my thinking, again, if you're a bull on this stock, if they could find a way of getting much more effective and efficient marketing spend, there could be really big upside on this. So we actually think it's an interesting business, I have to say, but not obvious value at the moment. And basically, it did slip through a profit warning yesterday, I think. Mm. So, but if it drops to 60p, as I say, I'd nibble a few. Yeah.
I think you've just got to have a positive view on MFI. I don't. I remember as a kid, it was useless. So
it isn't a brand
that sings like that really sort of captivated. I mean, if you did like, I don't know, Magnum ice cream or a Stella Artois or something that brings me, you know, gets me back to my youth. And
I remember some friends, newlyweds in our family, and the Irish woman, she was lovely, Trish, and she used to go, they kitted out their whole flat in MFI furniture. So it was sort of their first buy. And it was okay. It was all right. It was cheap and cheerful. And she always used to say, oh, Polly, we're going off to Murphy's. And I say, what's Murphy's? And she says, MFI. I call it Murphy's.
Okay, maybe I'm doing this far. It's just my own experience. Okay, we've got a question from Daffodil. He's asking... Paul, what is a coffee can stock?
Oh, God, that was that bloody book I bought. Cost me a fortune, that damn book. Because I didn't sell anything into 2022 as they were plunging, because they were long-term buy and hold, right out the market downturns, and I lost most of my bloody money was that book.
That's a coffee can stock. You just leave it. You basically
coffee can stock. Yeah, it's a book called something like 100, How to Spot 100 Baggers. Yeah. And it basically says you spot something unique and you just buy and hold forever. So you put it in what they called a coffee can, which I suppose is you'd like a tea caddy, but for coffee maybe. So yeah, I hate that book. I'd happily burn an effigy of that book.
Okay, right, fine. Okay, we've got Paul the Parrot. He's asking about Ultimate Products. He says there's a bigger yield than the PE, good brands, and it's forecasted for £11 million profit, £20 million of debt. He says it's interesting to Paul anyway. What's your view?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I haven't followed that. Gosh, yeah, look, those have really dropped, haven't they? Oh, what a good spot, Paul the Parrot. That looks very interesting. It's a pretty good solid business. Yeah, I've got forward PE of 7.8 and dividend yield of 6.4%. Owner managed. The management are very good. This is the guy I interviewed, right, wasn't it? Right at the 5 years ago, right when the pandemic started, I did a podcast with him, and he gave us an absolute masterclass in how to import goods from China and to deal with. They dealt with the pandemic fantastically well. Mm. Do you want to talk for a bit, Paul, while I look at my notes on it?
Yeah, one of the brands is Salter. The weighing scales, isn't it? We've got some in the house and stuff. And they do ceramic cooking stuff, I think. It's quite niche stuff, but it's well thought of equipment. I think the danger is that I think if the Chinese producers copycat, then just flood, you know, because obviously they're less competitive now in the States. They just turn their advertising spend and just sell it through Temu and Amazon. But as long as it's got strong brands that can defend those margins, then my instinct would be that it'd be okay. But it's got loyal customers. I say we don't buy anything other than Salter. Not that I don't think we've only got one. It isn't for me.
Yeah, I've just found my notes here. There was a profit warning on the 3rd of February. Weak demand and higher freight costs. And it did hint at a reduced divvy, so the divvy might be under pressure. Now, the interesting thing with this one is I've just remembered now Ultimate Products, they did very well on air fryers. They had an air fryer boom. Yeah, so the question is, are the results that they've come down to now, is that the new normal? Mm. You know, the prior year figures might have been just a one-off boom on air fryers. But these guys are... I think, high-quality importers. And then they stick a brand name on products that are pretty much designed by the Chinese factories. They tweak them and they buy a brand name cheaper, as you say, a historic brand name, put it on the item. It gets a little bit more pricing power because the customers know that. They sell to the supermarkets. They also sell online. That was doing quite good, I think, the selling online. And it's basically the supermarkets and the big retailers can buy direct, but I think they've found it problematic. So often they go back to Ultimate Products and say, do you know what? You handle it for us. Put your 15, 20, 25% markup on it. It saves us overall. So I like this business. I think it's a front end basically for the Chinese factories, and they manage everything. So yeah, we'll have a fresh look. We'll have a proper look at that one. Do we know when they're next reporting?
I don't know, but with a 6% yield and basically a 7.8% forward PE ratio, it's damn cheap, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't hang your hat on that yield, though, because they have hinted they might cut it. That's the only retort I would have on that. But yeah, I'll definitely have a fresh look at that. And next time it reports, I'll be up to speed. Yeah, 60 million market cap. I mean, just looking at that chart as well, just looks like it's ready for a bounce, doesn't it?
Yeah. Good. Another one which has bounced this week. You've got Ben Sharman. He's asking about Gooch and House Co. Made an acquisition, Global Photonics, into defence spend, basically. Looked a really interesting one. The market liked it. Shares have ticked up. What's your latest on Gooch and House Co, Paul?
I like it. Yeah, I last covered it on 8th of April, and I went green on this. I've concluded... it looks cheap, and we think there's a turnaround underway. This is the industrial lasers thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You know a lot more than me about it, but yeah, resourcing raw materials we put. It's got US manufacturing, so that was when the tariffs were a worry. Good balance sheet. So, yeah, we think it's cheap and a credible turnaround. So over to you, Paul. What's your view?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not actually the expert. One of the guys is on the call. He's the expert. A guy called David Raywood. He's been to the AGM. And it all comes down to basically how much recurring revenue streams do they have, recurring revenues, and can they get that gross margin up, and whether they've got really, really advanced technology. But is it a differentiator in this market? Because everybody seems to be having really advanced technology. Or is the USP going into effectively like the defense sector or the aerospace sector, whereby you've got to be certificated to get approvals to be able to get on these platforms. I'm not sure. Certain areas are really high quality stuff and others is less, but I know the gross margins are in and they're low 30s, and it just to me, it'd be the gross margin story. But if they can get that, they should be able to do 40% gross margins on this, because it's a really high caliber, you know, sort of like science. And if they do that, the shares will absolutely zoom.
I mean, looking at the chart, I mean, since the peak at 2021, it's been a disaster, hasn't it? It's just been over a four-year period, just relentlessly dropping. So you'd need pretty solid evidence that something's going to change, wouldn't you, really? But we think the numbers stack up, actually. Forward P of 12.5, nice strong balance sheet, as I say. You've got a 3% yield. I mean, these are not spectacular numbers, but if that's the starting point for a turnaround, then that's a good launch pad, isn't it?
I think it could be taken over at any point, but
It's a gross
margin story to me, moving up the value chain. We've got a quick question from Harish Harani. He's asking about Mobico, which is, I think, it's a transport business, basically.
Yeah, it's National Express.
And is it? Gotcha.
Yeah, then it's got the Spanish subsidiary. What's the name of it? Oh, drat. That Almada or something. That's the only decent bit of the business, basically. The Spanish business is highly profitable. Everything else. And it's got these disastrous railway contracts in Germany, which just seem to get worse and worse every time it reports. The big problem at Mobico is they've just announced the sale of the US school buses division. Now, press reports have been telling us that could be worth up to $1 billion. Well, they've just sold it for about $400 million. That's what caused this precipitous drop in share price. I believe the bonds have been downgraded as well. Recently, I spotted Moody. You know, Moody's one of those. And of course, when your bonds are into junk or approaching junk territory, that very often is telling you that the equity is, you know, just a little more than a call option and could be worth nothing. I think it's in real, well, it could be in trouble if that's the case. The other thing is they've got this perpetual bond, which is 500 million bond that never has to be repaid. And it's all an accounting con. It's basically so it gets classified as equity, and it's shown within the reserve section of the balance sheet. And it's not equity, it's debt. So that's a 22 million a year cash drain to fund the interest on this perpetual bond. And when you adjust that out and classify it as debt, this thing's the balance sheet now, the equity is just a call option. You know, it's a sliver of equity against a mountain of debt. I don't know what happens. I've looked into it in quite a bit of detail, spent half the morning on it and thought, this is a, you know, you need to spend 2 or 3 days unpicking all of this. And even then, you'd be just guessing. I mean, part of me is tempted to just put 0.5% of my portfolio in it purely as a punt. You know, I don't see any. You have to look into the maturities of the bonds and the debt facilities and things. I did do a bit of that, and I don't see any immediate sign of insolvency. So it could be one of those things where you could double, triple, quadruple your money if you get lucky. You could get unlucky and it has to do a massive rights issue, you know, and the price of that could be anyone's guess, couldn't it? So totally, I don't know how you can value this. It's just treat it as a punt or stay away from it, which is what I'm have you looked at it, Paul?
I would say Harish, if they've got basically a massive debt load, if you really want to go speculative into that, buy the debt, not the equity, because you might have a better chance. If it works, then the debt will make a huge capital gain. But I wouldn't touch the equity at these levels. It isn't just speculative, it's super speculative, that one.
It is. Sometimes, though, people can do fantastically well on these things, you know, but you need to be a special situations investor to really know what you're doing, I think. Or just treat it as a complete punt with money you can afford to lose. Nothing wrong with that.
We've got a couple of questions, just fine. We've got Oliver Selling. He's asking about, he says basically there are fewer than 1,000 spare prison cells across England and Wales, a record low for this year, and there's only 961 available. Is this good for big technologies? I know they don't do the UK tagging contract, but No, they don't know. But more broadly across the world, I would say it is positive. I don't know if you've got any quickies on that one at all.
Not really. No, I fluffed this trade, as I mentioned last week. I sold them about 3 days before they went up 60% or whatever it was. So, yeah, still smarting a bit on this. But we both actually, you timed your buy really badly and I timed my sell really badly. So between us, we've covered all angles. But no, we got our investing thesis right on this, which I'm really pleased about. Because long term, that's all that matters, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I would say probably up with events now, you know, looking at that chart as well. Given that you've got this huge, massive legal issue that's going to probably rumble away and cost a lot of money, you know, that could be 20 million a year drain in costs for big. So I would just say, being a nice trader personally, I'd sell them. But I think you were looking more long term, weren't you?
Yeah, I like the business long term. And I would say it is justified, that increase. OK, and the reason is not only because of the new CEO, who's excellent, got a reputation, but more importantly, the reason why he was put in, or my personal take in, is they wanted independence, because the previous CFO, Darren Morris, who stepped in to be the interim CEO, though, the shareholders asked Harwood to go in there, take him out, because they didn't want any risk that he could be preferential to the previous CEO who got sacked. So what that says to investors, and this is why the shares have gone up, is that there's total independence on the board.
Yeah.
And when they do get a penalty and a fine, and have to pay out a penalty to the minority investors, they will go after the previous CEO. So that's why the shares have gone up, because the risk of having a large fine that you're not then repaid by, you know, the CEO is now much lower, because the board are going to go after them like hell for leather.
Yeah, good point, Paul. No, makes complete sense. I mean, I'm wondering maybe it'd be a situation to just sell half and run the rest, you know. I mean, there are various strategies with it, but it is a very good business, there's no doubt about that. And it's got over 100 million in net cash as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think it's valued about 300 million now. So you're paying about, when we bought, it was worth 200 million with 100 million cash. I mean, it was to both of us, it was an absolute no brainer at around 60 to 80p. Yeah, interesting share for sure.
Yeah, we got a final question. We got one from Bemused, and I'm a bit bemused as well. It's asking about our Gentex. It basically came back. It was a disaster that I talked about heavily. So have a look at the one from 3 weeks ago. But now we are where we are. The shares have restarted trading at about 2.4, 2.5, around about the same level as the potential bid offer.
Yes.
What's been quite interesting is the whole volume of the shares since it's trading over the last 10 days have been above the bid offer, okay? Which says that people are either expecting a bid to come in, a competing bid above the 2.49, or alternatively hoping that the vote when it comes to the scheme of arrangement is going to be voted down. And therefore, essentially, they may be able to roll their shares into the new vehicle, or alternatively, it'll stay listed. But the people who have given irrevocable at 58% will lose their shares to the new owners, to IFX payments. Either way, it will be positive to investors. But that's the only way I can rationalize. There's been about 10 to 15% of the company's volume, which has been traded above the offer price for IFX payments when it happens, which says to me that actually there's a lot of people who do think that there's something, you know, there's a chance, and I would say a speculative chance, that something else could happen, because you don't normally see this. Normally I'd have expected this to trade at around about 2p at best, waiting for because the takeover by RFX payments will be the second half. I don't know whether you've ever, any of your thoughts on why the shares have traded above the 2.49p for 10 days?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, there's an outside chance that something might come through. But my angle on it is, I we don't know, because we haven't seen the commercial agreements. But to me, it seems unimaginable that IFX would have propped this thing up with substantial bridging loans without very tight terms and conditions requiring that the bid goes through, or, you know, the loans become instantly repayable, or there's a 10 million, £5 million poison pill fee to pay if someone comes in with a higher bid. But the other interesting angle on this is that somebody was suggesting, if they just tread water and the client positions unwind, they may not actually need the bridge funding.
Yes, and it'll come back.
So they might be able to then just say, well, actually, thanks for the loan. You know, we'll pay you the fees and the interest on it, but we don't need it anymore, in which case the equity could be recovered. But as I say, I would imagine it'll be belt and braces in terms of the T's and C's that they probably had to sign to get the bridge funding, you know? Yeah. So I think we've got to treat that as a very remote possibility.
Yes.
What's your thoughts, Paul?
No, I think you're right. I mean, I've still got, you know, I've got almost just under 3% of the shares. Okay. So I've lost a shed load of money, as we talked about before. Yes. It's been a painful, but I look at this, I think there's an outside chance. There's an outside chance that the scheme of arrangement gets voted down. It needs 25%, okay? It needs 75%, so 25% or more could vote it down, okay? They've got irrevocables for 58. If that happens, then they're unlikely to be able to delist it because you need 75% to delist it, And therefore, they've got two decisions. One, they either walk away, in fact, but they can only walk away after it comes to the actual loans. It's a 6-month facility, the RCF is anyway. So you've got a chance that could then unwind within the 6 months. Or alternatively, they don't walk away and they want 58% of the shares and therefore go to a tender offer rather than a scheme of arrangement, which has a 90% rate to squeeze out minorities. It stays listed and everybody else basically runs off. It's an IFX 58% owned business trading on AIM that you won't get squeezed out. Anyway, all I would say is that I think the base case, it still gets taken out at 2.49p, but there is an outside chance, whether it's through not succeeding at the scheme of arrangement or alternatively they're doing a tender offer, or alternatively a higher bid comes, or alternatively the whole thing's, you know, the actual positions unwind. But they're small probabilities. I'm personally almost certainly going to vote against the scheme of arrangement. That's simply because I've lost so much money that frankly 2.5p is derisory. I've already written it off to zero, so I can't lose anymore. I would happily roll the dice with IFX and roll it into a new vehicle, or even have the shares listed rather than actually sell it to them at 2.5p, because I think there's far more ups. If this business does recover, it would do well. But I'm 99% certain that I'm going to vote against it. I mean, but we haven't even had a scheme of arrangement document come out, so I can't say for certain. But that's the way I'm lined up.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, I'll watch from a safe distance, and I'll keep my fingers and toes crossed for you, Paul. So you're not tempted to average down, I hope.
No. No, that's not what I'm going to do. I've written it off to zero, but there's no way I'm throwing money into it again.
Yeah,
no
chance. That's good to hear.
All right, well, thanks very much for your questions. Really been a long session today. Appreciate it, Paul. Really appreciate, always your comments are fabulous. And same time next week, 2 o'clock next Thursday. So thanks, guys.
Lovely. Thanks, everyone. See you next week. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand, and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.